This is Sportsnet Today with Logan Gordon on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Blue line feed, Cole. Left point, Quinn Hughes, wrist shot, wide of the goal. Cole keeps the puck in on the near side. Joshua in the corner lets it go for Garland. Centers, Wilder, scores! Elias Lindholm, 62 seconds into overtime, and the Canucks have done it. They're the eighth team in history to erase a two-goal deficit with under 2 minutes to go and win in overtime.
Oh, Nashville.
Whoops.
Just that close, Colton Sissons. There was no goalie. Just a couple inches over, and it's tied at two, and it's the third goalie, and oh, boy. Elias Lindholm, the former Flame. What the hell was the Nashville D on that play, by the way?
Wide open.
Wide open in overtime.
I might have been able to score that.
Whew. Brock Besser leads the comeback, and the Vancouver Canucks now with a stranglehold on their series against the Nashville Predators to cap off a busy weekend of NHL playoff hockey. We've got teams on the brink of elimination. We've got one team already into the second round and two more games on Monday to get you ready for. Welcome to Sportsnet Today. It's Logan Gordon along with you live in the Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studios. They're your local experts for basement waterproofing, sump pumps, crawl spaces, foundation repair, and radon mitigation. For all things basement, you visit dlbasementsystemscalgary.ca. Amongst them, outstanding producers Cam and Shan, our new intern Grace here as well in the Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studios on this Monday, April 29th. What a weekend it was. Tons of drama in the NHL playoffs. We'll get to Sunday's results. Take a look at what's happening on this Monday night as well. Justin Cuthbert's going to join us later this hour, host of the Fan Pregame Show on Sportsnet to chat about the Leafs and the Bruins. No Austin Matthews at practice on Monday, so that's great news.
It's fine, right?
Can't be an issue. Oh, Toronto.
Well, William Nylander played, right?
Yeah, that's great. They sure did.
Surely they had some great chemistry on the bench, right?
Yeah, no issues that I could see. Things are going really well in Toronto. We'll talk about that. Things actually are going well for the Calgary Wranglers.
Yes.
See you later, Tucson. Get hockey out of the desert.
Oh.
Get out of here.
Come on.
Move wherever Utah tells you to move.
That's brutal.
Wranglers sweep away the Tucson Roadrunners and now set up a Battle of Alberta AHL-style Wranglers. And the Coachella Valley Fire. Is it Coachella Valley?
The Firebird, yeah.
Well, then it's not Edmonton's.
What?
That's Bakersfield.
Oh, no.
I'm just bad at my job.
No, you're not.
It's questionable.
What a name, though. Coachella Valley Firebird.
That's Seattle.
Yeah.
Seattle fired their coach today. That's the way I was trying to go about this. I just didn't do it very well. Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
You can try
again. Wranglers and the Coachella Valley Firebirds in round two. No Battle of Alberta AHL style. It's just a regular round two playoff series.
You know who one of their best players is?
Dustin Wolf?
Cameron Hughes.
Oh, you're talking about
Coachella Valley, yeah.
It's me. I'm their best player.
Yes.
Cameron Hughes is actually way more common than we thought because there's that guy in Coachella Valley. And then remember we did this way back, Cam?
Yeah,
there's that dancing fan guy.
What?
Oh, I don't think you were here. I think it was still when Taylor was doing this. There's a Cameron Hughes that you can book as like pro sports teams and he'll go and like hype up your crowd.
That's sweet.
Yeah, he's like hype. He's like crowd hype guy. He's got a website and a book and everything.
I mean, I feel like it's a common name, but like,
yeah. The more you know.
Do we have the best Cameron Hughes with us?
Debatable.
Let's not answer that.
Okay. Debatable. Sure. Depends on what category.
Just how general so. As a person.
We'll evaluate and get back to you.
Okay, noted.
This was all to tell you that Cass Vilgrain is going to join us. She was on the color broadcast with us on Sportsnet 960 alongside Sandra Priscina for the Wranglers series victory over Tucson. She's going to join us in hour two to talk about what she saw from the Wranglers and what we're going to get in round two against Coachella Valley. Jays finished up a weekend set with the Dodgers, so Shan will get us up to date with a Jays report. And as always, fan feedback line open to you, 960-960. Anything you want to talk about, hit us up on the fan feedback line. We'd love to hear from you on this Monday edition of the program. But yes, kicking things off by looking back at an exciting Sunday of games, starting with the Vancouver Canucks and the Nashville Predators. Brock Besser, the hat trick effort, saves Vancouver from going back for game five with the series tied at one game apiece. And yes, it's the former Flame, Elias Lindholm, with the game winner. Artur Shelovs.
What a name.
With the victory, Canucks use three goalies to pick up three wins to start the playoffs. Shan, they've done that before.
Oh, that's actually surprising.
They did it in 2004 against the Calgary Flames.
Oh.
Dan Kluche, Johan Hedberg, and Alex Auld. The last time a team used three different goalies to start.
The last time a team, period?
No, it's happened twice in NHL history.
Sure.
That a team has picked up three wins to start a postseason with three different goalies. Canucks this year, Canucks in 04, and the Blackhawks of 1972.
Ah, yes. Good year.
Esposito, Smith, and Desjardins, the only other combo. And that wasn't in the opening round. That was just at any point in the series. So the Canucks, ironically, the only team to kick off a postseason with three wins from three different goalies. Good news is it sounds like the Casey DeSmith injury is not long-term, unlike Thatcher Demko. So he should be back perhaps for game five. But Shelovs gets the job done for the Canucks. They come back and win it. Now the Nashville Predators on the brink of elimination and could set up an all-Canadian matchup in round two, as both the Oilers and the Canucks have their respective opponents on the brink of elimination. And look, it was a big game for Shelovs, forced into action. He says he's feeling good as the team heads back to Vancouver for game five.
That's like incredible, you know, like character win. Scored like two goals and late in the third and managed to pull it out. And, you know, it's like great feeling, like winning back here two games and then coming back home.
Different feeling in Nashville. Philip Forsberg, short on words, you can understand. Tough feeling heading into game five.
Facing elimination, we got to go there to win a game, keep ourselves alive, and we did it on the last time we were down there, so we know what it takes.
Tomorrow night, game five from Vancouver. You know Rogers Place is going to be rocking as the Canucks look to eliminate the Nashville Predators and move on to round two of the Stanley Cup playoffs. We did have one team already into round two, and it wasn't really much of a surprise as the New York Rangers over the weekend finished off the Washington Capitals.
Panarin at right wing drags it to the hash marks. Panarin leaves it back for Fox. Fox pass to the far wing. Zibanejad out to Panarin with a shot. He scores! Artemi Panarin on the power play. And the Rangers take a 3-2 lead.
Rangers sweep the series 4-0 with a victory on Sunday, 4-2 over the Washington Capitals. And the last team to clinch a Stanley Cup playoff spot, and the one that most people had questions about in the Washington Capitals, aren't able to win a single game in the opening round, and the President's Trophy winning New York Rangers are off to round number two. And you want to know just how lopsided this series was for the New York Rangers? In all four games, a total, the Rangers trail only for 3 minutes and 21 seconds in the opening round. That's it. Washington only able to lead in this series for 3 minutes and 21 seconds in four games.
It's not even surprising. They were one of the worst teams I've ever seen make the playoffs. And if it makes sense, their whole game plan was to shut Ovechkin down. They absolutely did that. 0 points, six shots. And Washington didn't have a chance.
No, it's surprising. I mean, it's a dismantling. The power play was 3-for-4 in the finale on Sunday. Artemi Panarin looks as dangerous as ever. Mika Zibanejad has six assists in four games for the Rangers, and the President's Trophy winners now await what is likely a round two matchup with the Carolina Hurricanes. as you mentioned, the Washington Capitals. Didn't get it done on either side of special teams, giving up power play goals and unable to score any on the power play themselves. That's what defenseman John Carlson says is the difference in this series.
We severely underperformed on both sides of special teams, which, you know, when we look at the numbers, there's nothing more telling.
Yeah, not good. Capitals will head into the offseason and evaluate where exactly they are, despite making the playoffs clearly not at the caliber of other teams in the Eastern Conference. Speaking of special teams, they've been a big factor in this Western Conference series between the Jets and the Colorado Avalanche. Problem for Winnipeg is it's all been one-sided.
Fallon Nichushkin, 18 seconds to go in the third period. Rantanen steals it away. Nichushkin has it at the red line towards the net. Yeah! Better boy, Bill! Throw the ship hole! His first career hat trick! And you thought it was snowing before with the pom-poms. Here come the hats! 12 seconds left. Val Nichushkin has three. The Avalanche, for the fourth time in this series, have five. And they are about to make their way back to Manitoba with a 3-1 series lead.
That was on the Colorado Radio Network, if you couldn't tell.
Give him a raise.
Really?
I liked it. It's playoffs, man.
Did you like throw the chapeau?
Throw the chapeau!
That's really good.
That's a good one.
I mean, if you're a Jets fan, don't listen. But.
No, that's Valeri Nichushkin's sixth goal of the series into an empty net for the hat trick. Colorado 5, Winnipeg 1. Avs lead the series 3-1. And I mentioned special teams a big factor in this series. Shan, the Avalanche 2-for-4 on Sunday. The Jets 0-for-4 on the power play. Rick Bowness not mincing any words about special teams and his team's performance in this series.
Want to take penalties? Want to play a three-quarter ice game? You're playing right into their hands. So our issues are self-inflicted. You saw us play the right way for 10 minutes in the second half of that first period. And then you play it, and then you take four penalties. You turn the puck over. That's exactly how they want to play.
He's not wrong.
No. Tell me this series isn't exactly like the Battle of Alberta from 2022.
Yeah, it's got to be a bit tough for Sean Monahan and Tyler Toffoli.
Yeah.
Looking back now, especially for Monahan, who has experienced this Avalanche team before a couple years back in a round one series that saw Colorado take out the Flames.
After the Flames won game one, and then Colorado went on to win the next four.
Good stat for the Avs. They're the fifth team in NHL history with five or more goals in the first four games of a series. The 85 Hawks, the 94 Rangers, 81 Islanders, and the 1946 Canadiens each went on to win a cup except for Chicago.
Jeez.
Five teams have scored more than five goals in each of their first four playoff games. Only one of those five teams did not go on to win a Stanley Cup, and that was the Hawks in 1985. That's the pace the Avs have been on.
You're doing this against only the Vezina winner from this year.
It's going to be unanimous.
It has to be.
With all due respect, the Vezina candidates did come out on this Monday. Sergei Bobrovsky, Thatcher Demko, and Connor Hellebuck. I can't see how it's not Hellebuck, who has 37 wins, a 239 goals against and a 921 save percentage. He was outstanding all year long, but has not been outstanding in this series. And look, to Rick Bowness's point there, power play coverage has not been good.
No.
Nichushkin scored two in the second period on the power play and put this game away. And the Winnipeg Jets have not had an answer to it. And very similar in some games we've seen for the Oilers and the Kings. You take penalties, you're playing with fire.
That's what happened last night.
Against this team. I don't know why Winnipeg hasn't figured that out, or, you know, whether or not the Avs just play at a speed that Winnipeg's not used to. But as much as I like this Jets team, and I really liked them coming into this postseason, Shan, I don't see how you win three in a row against this Avs team.
It's, you know what? You've got guys like Nathan MacKinnon, Cale Makar was a freak last night.
He's not bad.
He's an absolute freak. And you've got Nichushkin, who he does this every year. He gets hidden on this Avalanche lineup with Rantanen and MacKinnon and Makar and whatever. And then this guy scores a goal every single game. Like you mentioned, he's got six goals. This team is too good. And unless Hellebuck all of a sudden flips a switch, Jets are, I don't know, you can't win three in a row.
It's going to be awfully tough. Another team that'll need to win three in a row if they want to extend their postseason. It's the LA Kings, who fell 1-0 to the Oilers Sunday night.
Cuts left, swooping, dishing, tries for the one-timer, Bouchard scores, and it's 1-0 Edmonton in game four.
That's a gut punch for the LA Kings. Not quite as bad as the Nashville missing an empty netter to salt away a game in the series tied 2-2. The LA Kings were the better team on Sunday by a wide margin.
Oh, yeah.
It was not close, but the best player on the ice was Stuart Skinner, who makes 33 saves. Bouchard scores the only goal, and the Kings fall to the Oilers, who put up just 13 shots on goal in the game and still win after lackluster performances from Draisaitl, Connor McDavid. He still finishes with an assist because, of course, he does, but nowhere near McDavid level that we've seen. Oilers had three shots on goal in the third period, and they still find a way to beat the LA Kings, who took the physical road, 44-27. They outhit the Oilers. They're physical. It clearly bothered Edmonton. They didn't take a lot of penalties, but the one they took winds up in the back of their net, and they're unable to beat Stuart Skinner. And the Oilers now with a chokehold on this series, heading back to Edmonton for Game 5. Same situation as the Vancouver Canucks. As I mentioned, these two teams look like we'll see an all-Canadian battle in round number 2 as both of them head back to their respective home cities with a 3-1 lead. That's a tough loss for the Kings.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you talked about it. That one power play that they got, you kind of knew it was going to happen. You play that well, you look at it and you say, the only way the Oilers are going to score if they get a power play. Boom. Bouchard does a great job on the point. And yes, to be fair, Stuart Skinner, probably the best game I've seen him play.
Definitely in the postseason.
Absolutely. I mean, he was lights out. And he wasn't just in the right spot. He was making big saves. He flashed the leather quite a few times. Skinner looked great. There's no better way to say it than it's a gut punch.
Those are the four games on Sunday. And, of course, going back to Saturday, still lots of talk in Toronto following another heartbreaking loss for the Toronto Maple Leafs to the Boston Bruins and the absence of Austin Matthews in the third period, who left due to illness. This is what head coach Sheldon Keefe had to say going back to Saturday's post-game details, as much as he's willing to share on Austin Matthews' mysterious illness.
It's not one of those run-of-the-mill, everyday type of illnesses that sort of come and go. This one has lingered, and the effects have lingered and have gotten worse when he's getting on the ice and asserting himself. So we've just got to manage that and give him the time that he needs. And obviously we're hopeful that it'll turn.
Just got to give him the time that he needs.
So you got in the playoffs, lots of time.
Yeah, you're down 3-1 in the series. You've got a whole lot of time to work with if you're Sheldon Keefe. Not really. Good news is an extra day in between games for these teams as they head back to Boston. But the Toronto Maple Leafs, the snipping on the bench between Nylander, Marner, and Matthews, the fact that Brad Marchand has come out and asserted himself as one of the best players in this series, and the fact that the Toronto Maple Leafs just don't seem to have an answer for the Boston Bruins, make it 8 points for Brad Marchand in this series. Austin Matthews with the one big game. It's as close as the Leafs have come to downing this Boston team. They'll now need a big effort on Tuesday. They want to extend this series. We'll talk more with Justin Cuthbert coming up in a bit about this series and what's gone wrong for the Maple Leafs, but Austin Matthews did not practice for the Leafs on Monday with that illness, and his status for Game 5 is up in the air. How about going into Boston for Game 5? You've got Nylander just back, and now you might not have Austin Matthews for that game.
There's too much going on off the ice. There's too much going on the ice and too much going on off the ice. It's a disaster. When you have that many distractions against a team like Boston, who you probably won't be able to phase them at all, how do you beat them? And like, they had a chance. They really did. They looked pretty good in game two. It looked like the series was turning around, but I mean, Nylander had a couple plays that he just looked so off. And without Matthews, Matthews has legitimately carried this team this year. I don't think that's something crazy to say. And without Matthews, see ya.
A Monday night schedule includes two games, one a potential elimination game in Florida. The Panthers, after making a big comeback effort in Game 4, unable to put away the Lightning. They'll look to do so once again as the series is back in Sunrise. Lightning trail the series 3-1. It's a 5 o'clock puck drop on Sportsnet. And then at 7:30, the Stars managed to take one in Vegas. They'll look to tie the series up at 2 apiece, heading back to Dallas for Game 5. Stars and Golden Knights, a 7:30 puck drop on Sportsnet and right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan, following the Toronto Blue Jays and the Kansas City Royals. Speaking of the Kansas City Royals and the Toronto Blue Jays, we'll chat with Justin Cuthbert coming up in just a moment to get more on the Leafs and the Bruins series. But before that, Shan's got your latest with the Jays report.
Time now for the Jays Report on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Shan Burgee.
Shohei Ohtani and the Los Angeles Dodgers rolled into Toronto on Friday for a 3-game series and had their way with the Jays. Game 1 on Friday night was as ugly as could be. We all knew it was coming, we all knew it would hurt, but he didn't have to do it in his first at-bat.
Last year when Ohtani was here with the Angels, cheers went out all around the ballpark when he stepped up, but a very different place now. In the minds of Blue Jay fans. 1-1. Swing and a high fly ball. Deep right field. Springer at the wall. He's run out of room. That ball is gone. Starts the series just like he did last year. A home run in his first at-bat. It's 1-0 Dodgers.
He heard the boos from the crowd of just under 40,000 and sent one to the right field bullpen to open the scoring. Chris Bassitt got the start and was shaky from the get-go, but it all blew up in the third. Mookie Betts and Ohtani got on base for Freddie Freeman, who hit an RBI single, and then Will Smith, the catcher, not the guy who slapped Chris Rock, hit another one to make it 3-0. Then Max Muncy to the plate with two men on, and he makes no mistake for a 6-0 lead. That was the end of the night for Chris Bassitt, who finished with less than 3 innings pitched, 9 hits, 7 earned runs, and 3 batters walked. And there's really no point breaking down the rest of the game here because the Dodgers continued to beat up the Jays and came away with a 12-2 win in Game 1. But good news, everyone, Game 2 wasn't as brutal as Game 1, and that's about as nicely as I can put it. Yusei Kikuchi on the hill to face the dangerous Dodgers offense and try and help the Blue Jays bounce back. Freeman brought Betts home in the first to open the scoring, and in the second, Chris Taylor brought home a runner with a single. Ohtani did the same with a 119.2-mile-per-hour single to right field for a 4-0 lead. If you're thinking he hit that really hard, that's because he did. It's only the hardest hit baseball all season. Davis Schneider would bring home a runner in the seventh, as well as Kevin Biggio in the ninth, but that would be all. The Jays lose 4-2 to the Dodgers, and all they could do is avoid a sweep with a win in Game 3. Sunday's game was a great game to get Kevin Gausman back on track. He was 0-3 on the season, looking to snap a 5-game skid for Toronto. The good news is he was great, and the bats somewhat backed him up. Bottom of the second, the Jays put some pressure on Michael Grove and broke through with an RBI from Dalton Varsho and another from Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. With the bases cleared and 2 outs, Alejandro Kirk for the first time this season.
3-1 is hit well, right field. Chasing Páez back, he turns. It's gone! First home run of the season for Alejandro Kirk, and the Blue Jays lead 3-0.
3-0 lead for the Jays held until Freeman hit a 425-foot bomb in the sixth, but in the ninth, George Springer put on a defensive clinic.
Romano's pitch. Hit to right field. On the run, Springer racing back. Dives! And makes the catch! A scream from the seat of his pants by Springer. Highlight reel in right. One out. That was the best catch I've ever seen George Springer make. That was incredible. A potential game-saving catch.
The Jays finish with a 3-1 win as they avoid the sweep and move to 14-15 on the season. The Blue Jays are right back at it tonight with a three-game set against the Kansas City Royals, who they just lost 3-4 against last week. Jonathan Bolin versus Yariel Rodriguez will be your pitching matchup with first pitch at 5:07 tonight on the 960 airwaves. Enjoy the game tonight. I'm Shan Vergy, and that was your Jays Report.
Catch the Blue Jays all season long right here on Calgary's home of the Blue Jays, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Two games on this Monday NHL schedule. 5 o'clock start, Lightning and Panthers. Panthers look to put that series away. And then at 7:30 right here on Sportsnet 960 with the Stars and the Golden Knights, game 4 of that series. Dallas picking up the win in game 3, looking to even it up, heading back to Dallas for game number 5. And then, of course, another 4 games coming up on Tuesday, including the Leafs and the Bruins. Islanders, Hurricanes, Jets, Avalanche, Predators, Canucks, 4 elimination games coming your way on Tuesday. Lots to get to. We'll also dive into the Seattle conversation as they fired head coach Dave Hackstall on this Monday. But right now, very excited to go down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline and welcome in our next guest, co-host of the Fan Pregame Show on Sportsnet. It's our pal Justin Cuthbert joining us this afternoon. Justin, thanks for the time, man. How you doing?
I'm pretty good. Appreciate you having me on.
No, appreciate it, man. What's the vibe like in Toronto right now for Leafs fans after a tough loss on Saturday?
It's pretty bad, one would probably imagine. I mean, I've been in that building many times over the last 5, 6, 7 years, whether it's covering the team from a print perspective, radio perspective, whatever way you want to go. I've seen a lot of the real disappointing moments. And Saturday night, we were doing the radio broadcast, and it felt as hopeless as it's ever felt in that building. Like, not a single person in the building had an answer for what was going on. And I guess the worst part of it is that I don't think this is a necessarily difficult problem to solve in the Boston Bruins. Like, this is not an elite team, I don't think, by any stretch of the imagination. Yeah, they have culture and structure and coaching and goaltending, and that's a big part of the equation. But I don't think this is an elite team by any means, and it's flummoxing this version of the Maple Leafs. So, yeah, I think this group, this organization more specifically, is hitting sort of a pretty crucial moment in its history. And yeah, there's still one game to go, but it feels like there's going to be some heavy lifting and finally some change in this market.
What's held the Leafs back the most in your mind and gotten them to this point where they're down 3-1?
Well, it's definitely scoring goals, which is never really a problem in the regular season, is always a problem in the postseason. The Maple Leafs have, a collection of guys, more specifically Auston Matthews, Mitch Marner, and William Nylander, who, if they stick around for a long time, are going to rewrite the history books of a franchise that's been around for 100 plus years. Like, it's just going to be their names and everybody else by the end, again, if they stay together, if they have the opportunities to stay together. And yet none of that stuff ever translates. None of that stuff ever carries over. It's always the same story where they just cannot find or summon enough goal scoring. And it's perplexing in some ways, and it's understandable in other ways. It's kind of a catch-22 always, but this group does not adapt well to the changes. And when they don't adapt, when they fail to adapt, when the history repeats itself, it's kind of rooted in a failure to score goals, because everything else can kind of be fixed. Like, they can bring in better goaltending, and they can get a little tougher, and they've done some things that have put them in positions that they haven't been before. But ultimately, a core group, or a team that's designed around a core group that spends, 40-50% of its total cap dollars on a couple guys, if they're not able to do the job, then you're just going to get the same old story. And yeah, they've run into some unlucky things this time around, with William Nylander either dealing with migraines or a head injury or something that's somewhat unexplainable. And now Auston Matthews, we believe, is sick, left game 4, may not play game 5. It feels a bit unlucky, but they've definitely lost the benefit of the doubt over the years here.
How much of this in your mind is on Sheldon Keefe and the coaching staff?
A lot of it. I don't think you can excuse the players, as I just kind of have gone on about. But how many times have you heard a talking head say, well, you know, Boston's got the coaching advantage in this series. And it's almost like said cavalier, right? And that really bothers me because, well, the Maple Leafs are a team that has a ton of money. They and their fans like to talk about, well, you know, we're responsible for keeping Arizona in the league with all of the revenue sharing, all the money that we channel towards them. Well, why is a team that is hurt by the salary cap but does have money to spend in other ways just accept having inferior coaching? That just doesn't really make all that much sense to me. I think everyone sort of understands that Jim Montgomery is better. If Jim Montgomery is better and there's an acknowledgement of that, I just feel like the Maple Leafs have put themselves in this position willingly. I don't think Sheldon.
I think we lost Justin there. We're just going to take a quick second and reconnect. Justin Cuthbert joining us this afternoon, chatting Leafs Bruins. We'll get into some other playoff conversations with Justin coming up in just a moment here. But yeah, I mean, the Sheldon Keefe conversation is a tough one because I can't see a world where he survives this. I wonder about Brendan Shanahan as well. And look, I don't think anyone's necessarily blaming Brad Treliving for keeping a guy like Sheldon Keefe around. I think that you have to, as a GM, naturally see what we do, but this happens so often in that world of a new GM coming in and not having his guy at the coaching position. And we've got Justin back on the line there. Sorry, Justin, we just lost you there in the middle of that answer about Jim Montgomery, and you were just going on about why the Leafs, you know, probably need to be spending some more in that category.
Yeah, again, I just do think there is a divide. I'm not sure where you lost me there, but if you are a team with a lot of money and a lot of resources and you're choosing to have inferior parts to your system, I just think that's misguided. And this team doubled down on Sheldon Keefe. He's fired in a couple days. He will not coach on the extension he signed after Brad Treliving showed up last spring. So I just feel like, yeah, that was probably an unforced error, and not that it really matters much, but why are you accepting having coaching that would be limited in some ways? This group clearly needs a change just from the forward perspective, just setting aside Sheldon Keefe. They need a change because it's so stale as is. But then again, like, you're moving on from someone who I don't think is going to be immediately scooped up and thought of as this prized possession. I think they're pretty mid when it comes to coaching, and I think that's showing itself again.
And just on that conversation where you were there, where you lost you, I was just on it. And I know, to me, it always feels like when the GM comes in, a new guy comes in and decides to keep a coach around, it always feels like he's doing it to be fair to the guy, to give him an opportunity to prove that he can be the coach. But I mean, what GM doesn't come in and want his own guy at that spot? To me, it always feels like you're delaying the inevitable. And I kind of wonder about that decision from Treliving here. You know, because we all knew if this didn't go the right way for the Leafs this season, he was going to have to get rid of Sheldon Keefe. So why bother signing him to that extension? So many coaches. I mean, Hackstall is another one today that just got off before an extension too. It feels like GMs are trying to give a coach a chance when maybe necessarily they don't need to go ahead and give him that money until they've proven a little more.
Yeah, and I go back to Vegas with this because Vegas was a good team. They moved on from Jared Gallant because they saw Peter DeBoer was available and he's a really good coach. And then, you know, maybe got a little stale with DeBoer, or they just realized, hey, maybe a better coach is out there in Bruce Cassidy. And they have moved on from really good coaches that 90% of the NHL would really, really want, at least in Peter DeBoer. And they just felt, hey, we can marginally upgrade here, so why not do it? Marginal upgrade is something that most teams don't go for when it comes to decision making and relationships and spending money. But at a certain point, you have to take the upgrades where they are. And yeah, I think there are quite a few upgrades on Sheldon Keefe, if I'm being honest.
Do the core group of Leafs forwards now wear the title of underperformers in the postseason, or is that a narrative that's been blown out of proportion in Toronto?
No, they definitely wear it. I think it's written right on their forehead, to be honest. These guys, again, like what I was kind of going with on about earlier about, you know, they're going to have all these records, but it doesn't translate. I guess it's most them. It is the entire team, though. But I think now you're at the point where the ditch is so deep that, you know, even if you have a ladder in there, it's not going to get you to the top. Like, I do feel like there is so much scar tissue that it's really, really impossible for them to overcome, and that we've kind of reached the point now where it isn't going to work out. And frankly, if I'm being like perfectly honest, I don't think they're going to win with Mitch Marner. I don't think they're going to have time to win with John Tavares, because John Tavares is diminishing asset at this point. 1 year left on this deal, probably not going to work to the future. So if we're thinking about how to redefine or actually give this team an identity, like, I do think they should be moving toward, hey, let's not build around these four. Let's just build around Austin Matthews. Mm-hmm. And whatever Austin Matthews needs, we're going to try to, you know, basically please and deliver on the promise to him. Because right now the promise that these four have been given, and what this entire thing has been based on, just hasn't worked. And I think the identity being the core four is misguided, and the identity eventually should be, hey, just Austin Matthews. He's the one guy that I do think can turn the page, can forget about the past, move forward. I think it weighs everybody else down. And if you do start to rejig this roster and build around one guy, and that one guy is Austin Matthews, yeah, maybe William Nylander's playing a supporting role, and maybe John Tavares can play third line center for $2 million in the future. Maybe there's a spot for Mitch Marner, but eventually I do think they have to decide what's most important and just funnel all their resources into supporting that. And when I do think they make that decision, I think there will be hope. But ultimately, with the way that it's designed, where it's a quarter share or 20% share, if you want to lump in Morgan Riley, I mean, that sort of situation structure and line of thinking has just been faulty to this point. That ecosystem isn't working. And despite them having a piece in Austin Matthews who can be the guy to win a Stanley Cup, I still believe right now with the current structure and where he belongs in the pecking order, which is still ultimately very high, it's just shared. And eventually it should probably be just his.
Despite where they are in the series, has there been any bright spots for this team? Has there been anybody that the Leafs and their fan base can cling on to and say, at least this player has performed up to expectations or maybe above them?
Not really, yeah. To be honest. I mean, William Nylander's, I mean, if you're, you know, doing the ABC grade, it's NI, not complete, or not, I guess, I don't know. It's been so long, I don't remember what the report card said. But, like, incomplete, I guess. Yeah, like, you can't really judge him. Austin Matthews has now exited the series. Mitch Marner is basically public enemy number one. The blue line is not playing well. I mean, you could pick at the margins here and say, well, they shouldn't have pulled Connor Dewar from the lineup because he was really good the first three games. Like, you could go down that route, but ultimately it all rests on the shoulders of the top guys, and the top guys, once again, are failing to deliver for this team.
I think you've underrested the fact that Joseph Woll didn't let in a goal in the third period, so that's... That's what I thought you were going to go with that, but, you know, it's fair.
That is true. That is true. But I will say, like, okay, yeah, that's great. And he may be great in game five, but you've basically removed Ilya Samsonov from the series now, if you're the Maple Leafs, and Sheldon Keefe. Like, there's not really a going back with Ilya Samsonov, unfortunately. So now it's just, okay, he's out of the series, and he was really good, at least in the final months of the regular season, and now you're down to one goaltender. So, like, I have belief in Joseph Woll. If they had true belief that he was the guy, he probably would have started game one. And he could be the guy eventually. But even that, even a positive in Woll comes with a negative in that, well, you only have one goaltender now.
Is that the expectation? Is that what everyone's sort of expecting for game five on Tuesday, is that we're going to see Joseph Woll get an opportunity to start here?
Yeah, I'd be stunned if he didn't. I don't know if people were, you know, talking with certainty about that earlier today. I'm still catching up a little bit. But that's sort of the pattern and routine with Samsonov. He just cannot, if given a bout of adversity, if there's a poor performance, the bounce back just is never there. Putting him in game five would be essentially, in my opinion, waving the white flag, because I just don't think it would go well.
Last one on this series, I'll ask you about a couple other ones that we got going on. How disappointing, I mean, I guess it goes back to what we've talked about so much about these top players, but, you know, the power plays at 7.1%, the penalty kills at 53.8%. These are just numbers. You know, the Winnipeg Jets are getting killed on special teams. The Capitals got killed on special teams in their series. But, you know, do those guys have Matthews and Marner and these kind of guys? Like, I guess it goes back to even what you were saying about there just hasn't been that bright spot. But, I mean, are we still surprised that it's gotten this bad, like that this version of the Maple Leafs has really fallen to this point just four games into the series?
Well, coaching, right?
Yeah.
That's another one on the ledger there. Like, if your power play and your penalty killing is struggling, I mean, these are things that are preordained, designed, strategized at a deep level. And I think if it's struggling at a great rate, like, that's clearly showing some flaws in the design. But, I mean, I'm watching, obviously, a lot of this Edmonton Oilers power play. And you've got a massive weapon in Evan Bouchard at the point. You've got Leon Draisaitl, who might be the best in that position, shooting the puck at a really difficult angle in the entire league. Zach Hyman's probably the best net front player in the entire league. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is elite in that he can get the puck and make the smart play pretty much every time under pressure. And then you've got Connor McDavid, who is an absolute wizard and a power play player unlike anyone else we've seen in the league. But it's great to have that one difference maker in McDavid, but you've got four others who are elite in what they do. With Toronto, yeah, Auston Matthews is an elite goal scorer. But when that's the only thing that power play can do, because Morgan Riley can't shoot the puck, because Mitch Marner can't shoot the puck, because William Nylander's basically been unavailable until game four, and John Tavares is a little bit slow in his decision-making and is not necessarily the best bumper player in the world anymore. Like, it's a pretty easy task to figure out, at least in my opinion. It's apples and oranges comparing a team like the Oilers on special teams to a team like the Maple Leafs. The penalty kill just looks out of sorts, and to me, that falls on coaching. But yeah, special teams, goaltending, if you don't have those things, you're not going to go very far. You could score, a million goals at 5-on-5 will do it. But if it's just going to be a couple, it's going to be really difficult every night. And that's the trap the Leafs have fallen into.
Justin Cuthbert's along with us from Sportsnet 590, the Fan in Toronto, and the Fan pregame show on Sportsnet. What other series has caught your eye outside of Maple Leafs, Bruins? I know Rangers, Capitals is the only other one in the books, but everything else still underway for the postseason outside of Leafs Bruins. What's caught your attention, Justin?
Yeah, I'm probably gravitating mostly towards the Oilers just because I think there is something special there. But Vancouver, Nashville is absolute chaos that I'm here for. I mean, just absolute, like the narratives, the storylines, the wild things that have happened. It's pretty crazy where we are in that series. The comeback by the Canucks yesterday, Brock Besser, just awesome stuff. The fact that Vancouver's used three goaltenders, I'm kind of seeing like some fault in them, but I'm also seeing resolve, and I don't know where that really, how that all shakes down. But I really, really desperately want to see Vancouver and Edmonton meet in what would be, I guess, a Pacific Division final. It would be tremendously fun. Just hope Thatcher Demko is there, because I do think eventually it would be a bit of a mismatch if they didn't, that being Vancouver have their number one goaltender there. But Nashville and Vancouver is loads of fun. It may be loads of fun because both teams aren't really a true Stanley Cup contender, but I'm enjoying it as a first-round series for sure.
Any surprise that Colorado's been able to do what they've done to Winnipeg in four games?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I definitely didn't think Connor Hellebuck would be a liability through four. Maybe I was sleeping a little bit on Colorado's talent, thought they were diminished, at least compared to 2 years ago, but they look loaded for bear and really good. Vegas, Colorado, if we see it, it's going to be awesome. Colorado, Dallas will be awesome. Edmonton certainly has the advantage of path here. But yeah, some really, really good series await in the Western Conference. And that, I suppose, is because Colorado's handling business there with Winnipeg. That's sort of like Boston to me. Like, they are well coached. They are structured. But if you have the talent to overcome it, it could get a little ugly. And it's gotten a little ugly in that series with Colorado just being able to, with the top 10% or the 10% of the roster, being so overwhelming compared to Winnipeg's 10%. I think that's just what we've seen. But Colorado, though, I think is one of the surprises of the entire playoffs so far, which is weird because, you know, they were the best team by far a couple of years ago.
And last but not least, you see a lot of these teams covering the Leafs as often as you guys do. Changing the guard in Florida as to who the best hockey team is between the Panthers and the Lightning?
Definitely. I was pretty bullish on Tampa. I thought they had some potential coming in. But Florida's showing who the most dominant team in Florida is. I didn't catch much of game four. We were preparing for the Leaf game.
Yeah.
But what I have seen between the two teams through three games has been, you know, pretty decisive. I mean, Florida is sort of in the Boston-Vancouver sort of line of thinking where yeah, like the first thing is coaching and structure and playing, you know, the way the game should be played, at least from a 5-on-5 run of play perspective. Like, they do that better than everyone right now, at least I think. It's just, in the end, will they have enough high-end talent to survive? Because they hit a wall last year with Vegas, and I still think they missed something from that real elite talent group. But, you know, the way they play and the opportunistic nature with they score goals, it's definitely looking like it's enough against a Tampa team that still has that talent, but maybe doesn't have the depth anymore.
Curious to see what Tampa has in store tonight, see if they can extend this by another game. Justin, always appreciate the time, man. Thanks for the conversation. Enjoy the game on Tuesday, eh?
Appreciate it. We'll talk again soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, man. Justin Cuthbert joining us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Again, Leafs coverage on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and he joins our good friend and pal,
whoops,
Ailish Forfar, on the Fan pregame show. Thanks. they get you set on Sportsnet TV every weekday on the Sportsnet television network. And I mean, I tried, Leafs fans, I tried to tell me what the positive is, and I honestly asked him because I don't know, and he gave me the answer I was expecting. There just isn't a lot of positives. Like, nobody has. It's not like Nylander came back and at least had 4 points and they still lost. Or, like, Max Domi has 3 points, the same as Austin Matthews. Okay, that's still not enough from anybody. Samsonov's goals against, still over 3. Morgan Riley's the only real defenseman that's...
That's the biggest problem in my mind.
No,
I know that the top-end guys have... During the playoffs, they don't get it done. But at the same time, Morgan Riley is the only legitimate defenseman that can do both. He can score, he can defend, he can do whatever. And then the other guys, you got a bunch of tough dudes, but Lyubushkin hasn't scored a goal in like 3 years. Like, stuff like this. So this Leafs team... We've said it so many times, I think year after year, at least the last 3 years. Oh, I think this might be it. I really think this is it.
A couple texts came in at 960-960 on the Leafs, so we're having that conversation with Justin. This text says, I'm not a Maple Leafs fan. They need a guy like Torch. They need some discipline. I think they're getting a new coach, that's for sure.
Babcock sure worked well with Marner.
I can't see. Well, maybe Marner's not there. Who knows? At this point, the way that team's going, you kind of have to look at breaking them up at this point. Matt and Cochran says, Brad's been in that position before with Hartley. Should have canned Keefe if you have even a doubt about his ability as the head coach. I kind of agree with that.
Yeah.
Why hand out an extension for a guy that you have no history with and no firsthand experience as to how he works? I know every coach wants to say, oh, I can't coach on my last year of a contract without any. Yes, you can. You have to prove to me that you're the right coach for this team. I'm the new GM. Maybe I'm not going to fire you right now, but I'll give you a year to prove to me you're the right guy. He's not the right guy. And you gave him a contract extension. Why? It's just a pure waste of money. GMs do that so they look like the good guy and they gave the coach lots of opportunity. You're just wasting money. You have to, as a new GM, understand. And the new GM always go and get their own guy. It's just, it's how it happens. These relationships don't work because he was the last GM's guy. Why are you wasting money on this? This is a longer text, but I'll get to some of it here. Hey, Logo, lifelong Leafs fan. What they're missing is easy. They lack leadership and coaching. Talented roster, you can pick it apart, but other than goaltending on paper, they're a better team than the Bruins, but they have no emotional leader like Marchand, a bunch of individuals. Everyone picks on Marner, and I agree he has to quit whining for calls. But to me, Morgan Riley has been invisible. Tyler Bertuzzi, who was Boston's best player last season, has looked lost all year in Toronto, and the fit hasn't worked. Matthews, Marner, Nylander, Riley, and to a lesser extent, Tavares are great players, but not leaders. I was hoping Max Domi would step up and take that role. Hope they keep him and give him another shot. Could be their Marchand. Keefe is a disaster. Time to move on. Hire a coach with good playoff track record. Somebody's got to step up. I mean, even to just on a pride standpoint, it's going to be hard. Matthews doesn't sound like if he even plays that he's going to be healthy for game 5 walking into Boston. But you got to show some spine if you're that team. You can't let them walk over you in 5 games and just move into the offseason. That's just not good enough for a Leafs team and some star players that are getting paid to be star players but haven't performed like star players. To start, as you know, Justin said, getting rid of that mentality that you guys are playoff underperformers. Maybe you don't win the series, but you could go a long way to changing that narrative if you have a couple of good games and can maybe, I don't know, at least push it to six. That's
all you could do right now. All you could do is try and push it to six. But I agree with Justin.
Don't have a lot of faith in
that. And Justin was really blunt. I respected how blunt he was there. This Leafs team they're not doing it. And I know, like, the talent is there. I never fully counted the Leafs out. This is the first time. It's like, man, they're just it's and playing against Boston doesn't help because that is the definition of team culture. And we're seeing two completely different teams going at it, and we see which one works.
Take a break. Come back on the other side. We're going to dive into the Calgary Wranglers. Coachella Valley Firebirds and the Calgary Wranglers, round two of the Calder Cup playoffs after the Wranglers swept away the Tucson Roadrunners. Cass Vilgrain's going to join us. Still going to talk about the Seattle situation. They have fired head coach Dave Hackstall on this Monday. And going to look ahead to the Jays and the Royals as they kick off a series in Toronto. Lots still to come when we kick off hour two. It's Sportsnet Today here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.